Hello, hello, and welcome to another podcast episode of Overpowering Emotions, where I talk all things big emotions, emotion regulation, and of course, resilience. We are on our resilience journey, and we are on part two, looking at some of these different types of coping approaches. Last week, I talked about emotion-focused strategies, and today I'm talking about problem-solving-focused strategies. So problem-solving-focused strategies, it's really about looking at solving the practical aspects of a situation. So we're addressing the problem or the source of the stress directly and effectively. So the first step in problem-focused coping is acknowledging the existence of a problem in the first place, right? Like I had said previously, having those emotion-focused coping strategies is helpful. That lays the groundwork so that we can keep our prefrontal cortex online, and then we can go into identifying and defining what the problem, situation, challenge is, whatever that is. So that really entails us understanding all of those practical aspects of the situation. So once we recognize the problem, we can start to analyze the situation. So we're going to start maybe breaking down whatever the problem is into manageable components. And then we're looking at potential approaches to resolve that problem. We're involving kids in this process, even from a very young age. Obviously, we're going to adapt our language, but we can really start working on this collaboratively, right? And then we can brainstorm various solutions or strategies, to be able to tackle the situation. So when we're doing this, we're really encouraging creativity. We're really promoting flexibility and open-mindedness because we're going to explore lots of different options and their potential effectiveness. So that's all really important for resilience anyway, and good executive functioning skills, life skills that we want our kids to have. When we have different ideas, we want to evaluate the different options. Is it feasible? Can I actually do it? What are the benefits? What are the potential drawbacks of each of those options? And then they can make an informed choice. And once they make that choice, they can take the steps to address the problem directly. So that might require effort and time and commitment to execute the chosen solution, which is a really big step. So we might have to support them. And then after, they try that plan, we're going to check back in, right? Let's assess and see what were the results of making that choice. Are there adjustments that we need to do? Is there some learning opportunity for next time? So that evaluation piece really ensures that that chosen approach is effective, in addressing whatever the problem is. So I'll give a few examples. So let's just say that we have a teenager who avoids studying, right? That's a big one that I am dealing with at the moment. So we really know it doesn't really help to just sit and worry about it. Avoiding doesn't help either. So they really need to take an active approach. And that's where the problem-solving approach comes in, right? Because if we're just sitting and regulating our emotions, accepting them, oh, I'm stressed again about studying, it's never going to help them to get to studying in that instance, right? So that's why they really need to move on to the next step. So again, first they need to recognize that they're avoiding studying in the first place. That's the problem. So next they need to analyze, what are the hard parts that I'm avoiding? What are the easier parts of studying? So breaking that down alone can really help get the brain over the blockage of getting started with studying in the first place. So maybe they can just do a quick tally. What are their study habits? What study habits aren't uber helpful? Maybe me trying to study while I'm watching a Marvel movie isn't actually helpful. So maybe I can improve, on that approach. Maybe it's something different. They might realize that they need a system to figure out what material that they need to focus on for, to study in the first place, and then a way to plan out their time effectively. So brainstorming a bunch of ideas. So ideas could be color coding material, right? This is one that I give all the time. So as I'm going through my notes, green stuff is stuff that I know, easy peasy. I could explain it. I could teach it to you right now. Yellow stuff makes sense in my head, but I'm not sure I could tell it in a way that, confidently and efficiently. I sort of know it. Pink, I don't know. It's like I've never read this before, or I have no clue. It just doesn't make sense to me, right? So using past exams or notes, that can really help create that study guide, right? Green stuff, I don't need to spend so much time on. I need to spend a lot more time on the pink stuff and then the yellow stuff. So now they know where to spend their time and where they should start. Maybe they're creating a study schedule, right? Getting help from a teacher or parent or mentor, something like that, or even just some direction on what they really should be focusing on can be helpful too. Maybe they're studying in a group or join some sort of study group. So they're going to brainstorm all of these ideas. Then they're going to figure out the pros and the cons, what's doable, what is something I'm actually going to follow through with, what's going to be most helpful for me, and then they're going to create and implement a plan to directly address that challenge of avoiding studying. And then they do a follow-up, maybe on their own, maybe with a parent or teacher in a week. You know, how's it going? How's studying going? Is it working? What needs tweaking, right? Or do you need a complete overhaul so that you can actually feel successful? Let's say that we have, so that's one example. Let's say another example is we have a child who's in a fight with their friend, also something that happens quite frequently. They could use a problem-focused coping by recognizing that there's a problem, that, you know, I'm in a friendship fire rather than avoiding it, and they're not my friend, and I'm just never going to talk to them again. They're going to underlie or look at those underlying pieces that might have contributed to the problem, brainstorming possible solutions, and then they're going to go and try it, right? They're going to have maybe a direct conversation with their friend. So instead of reacting impulsively to any disagreement with a friend or saying, I hate you, right? Or ghosting them, because I see that happen a lot, you'd be surprised. They really are engaging in open communication, effective communication. We want this for our children. They're actively listening to their friend's perspective. Together, maybe they're going to find a solution, right? If it's a family conflict, we're going to use our good, proactive, collaborative problem-solving skills through very calm, constructive conversations. That's really important. If there's a child who's struggling with time management, problem-focused coping is really good, right? Again, we're going to recognize this problem. Here comes my time wasters. I don't know how to manage. I'm always running out of time. There's always fights in the morning. Where is your time being wasted, right? Figure that out. How long is it actually taking you to do things, right? Have those time predictions and then generating solutions. So maybe it's creating a 3-priority focus. You know, I have to do these 3 things first in the morning before I ever pick up my phone, right? So getting their time wasters out of sight. Dogs and cats, animals might be trickier, but anything else, get it out of sight, right? Maybe they are using a time management app. I don't know. Anything that they want to try just to see, does this help improve my time management skills? Is it helping us not fight so much when we leave in the morning or whatever that is? I mean, I could go on and on. There's so much, you know, if you've got a teenager with unhealthy screen habits, right? Excessive screen time. Again, we can use problem-focused coping. I doubt that a lot would actually recognize that there's a problem to do anything about it, but that would be the first step. But maybe it's, how do I get my parents off my back from screaming at me all the time, right? And then they can analyze, why am I using screens so much? Where is it getting my parents really in a tizzy? Am I avoiding things, right? Am I bored? Figuring out how come I'm always turning to that? And then if we can understand the function of that, maybe we can brainstorm alternative ideas. Maybe I'm going to go hang out with a friend or try to reach out to 3 friends before I go on a screen. Or I'm going to go for a walk for 10 minutes before I go on a screen. Maybe it's setting screen time limits, right? Whatever it is, coming up with a plan and then implementing those solutions to address the issue. So we can see problem solving is helpful whenever we have control. It's helpful whenever we have to make a decision, even like choosing. I mean, my daughter right now is just going through, who do I say yes to? Which university, which program do I say yes to? It can be helpful for a career path, staying in a relationship, or even just going to a party. Do I go to the party or just do I stay home and cuddle with my pets and watch Netflix, right? So being able to go through the pros and the cons of each choice, gathering information, maybe we're seeking guidance and opinions from other people as well. Really, we can actually use this problem solving to manage emotions too by recognizing triggers, identifying healthy outlets, practicing strategies proactively. When we're actively addressing problems, kids experience a sense of control and agency over their circumstances, and that's going to help reduce their stress and anxiety, right, and build their resilience and promote more positive behaviors. So they really need to do this process themselves. Of course, we're going to guide them, but we're not telling them what to do. We're not telling them to turn off their screens or just start studying, right? We're not making any final decisions for them. They're doing that themselves. And that's really empowering them. It's really giving them that sense of self-efficacy and competence that are so important. It's crucial for them because now they're learning, I can tackle the challenge. I can do it. That's going to boost their self-esteem and their confidence and resilience. Us telling them all the time is only going to crush their esteem and their confidence and motivation to do any of it. So when we're addressing problems directly, we can also prevent future problems with our parents, with failing school, but even just emotional disorders, because we're able to cope and figure out what to do next. And so it's really building that resilience because they're better equipped to face future challenges and future adversity with confidence and adaptability. So problem-solving focused coping, it's highly effective in situations where practical solutions exist, right? So we're addressing any school problems, any executive functioning problems, organization, time management, you know, conflicts, any time we can find a practical solution. So problem solving focused coping, it's obviously helpful whenever they need to make a choice, whenever they need to make informed decisions, right? All of those things are really important. So even just with ongoing stressors too, maybe they have a demanding workload. Maybe they have a really challenging family situation. There's probably something within their realm of control. Some things are going to be out of their control, but something within their control. So now we can see a little bit of emotion focus and problem focus. Both are really important. That problem solving focus, though, it really provides a structured approach to reduce that stress, enhance well-being, and all of that kind of thing. I love this framework and use it all the time. We have our weekly family meetings. If you're not doing that, please do it. I think that that's really important. Teachers could be doing it in the classroom. If you're a therapist, you could be making sure all of the families that you work with are doing this, because we're not waiting until big issues. And now it's like, I need to talk to you. Wow, it's already a fight. We haven't even got to the talk. Every Sunday, we're doing our family meetings. So we just know, right? This is where things are going to come up. It could be chores not getting done up. Homework issues, anything else that comes up. So that's definitely a preferred approach, you know, to be proactive, and we're looking at solutions within our control or anything that we can, you know, act upon immediately to sort of mitigate that challenge. All of these examples are healthy, helpful ways of problem solving, but there's unhelpful ways too. We want to make sure we're addressing those. Of course, any excessive rumination, any overthinking about problems, we think that we're problem solving, just sitting, that is not helpful. If we're not taking concrete action, we're just going to, you know, escalate all of that anxiety and big emotions and indecision. So we don't want to get stuck there, right? That anxiety is really good. Big emotions are really good at making us think that we're problem solving because we're playing out every solution in our head, but we're not actually taking action. So, you know, you actually have to do something after you do that problem solving. And it's usually better to do it, you know, pen on paper or getting it written down, externalizing it a little bit rather than replaying it in your brain, because we just fall into the default rumination mode and we don't want to do that. Setting unrealistic standards, striving perfection, all of that can hinder progress too. And it's just causing more stress and frustration. If kids are always using problem solving as a way to avoid any of the emotional aspects of a problem, that's a problem too, because they're neglecting the importance of emotional processing. So we need, that's why I still talk about emotion coping strategies, really is the foundation. We still need to sit with it, notice it, feel it. I can handle it. What am I going to do now? Some kids really get stuck. And some kids really seem stubborn, really, at the end of the day, when they're only going to follow one rule, one solution. They're not going to do any other you know, other idea, they're not even going to consider alternative approaches, that can really impede problem resolution as well if they're getting stuck. Some might reject offers, right? You know, people who want to help or support them, they believe that they have to tackle everything entirely on their own. That could be a problem. But conversely, some might become overly reliant, overly dependent, right, on others to solve their problem or to do things for them. And so then that's leading to a lack of self-efficacy and independence. So there's always traps. With every approach that we take, we just want to watch out for some of those traps. We know any approach is helpful when kids are learning skills, right? They're learning these skills, they're practicing these skills, and it's actually contributing to their emotional well-being and resilience. When it helps them navigate any stressors, when it promotes effective communication and collaboration, especially in resolving conflicts, when it helps them make decisions, address stressors proactively, contributes to that self-efficacy, I can manage it. Facing their fears, right? Not avoiding discomfort. I think that that's really helpful. So I'm going to leave it there for today. I've now introduced both the emotion-focused coping strategies and the problem-solving-focused strategies. I will be going into a little bit more of them, you know, some of the key differences and actually how do we, you know, what are the specific skills that we need to start focusing on. So enjoy the rest of your day. Think about now. So last week you were looking at the emotion-focused strategies. I just want to leave you with something now. Is looking at a situation where, you know, opportunities to use and help children, you know, learn and practice these problem-focused coping strategies. So maybe there's a problem in the class. You can have a class-wide collaborative problem solving session, or as a family, or again, if you're a therapist, you're going to walk through this with the family, learning all of these different steps. We're going to identify the problem, look for all the different possible solutions, look at the pros and cons of each solution, implement a plan, make a plan, implement the plan, and then evaluate it. So look for an opportunity or several opportunities to problem solve things. Sometimes it's even just if there's nothing coming up, you can give them a challenge. You could give them a riddle, right? Here's a riddle. How are you going to start? What do you need to do? What are the strategies are you going to use to figure this out? What are some different options of figuring it out? Let's go try it, right? We can use those types of things. So go help those kiddos be bold and courageous, and I will see you next time.